this at a time where there is also a call, according to experts, for more support for keeping retirement age people in the workforce. Well, Helen Hirsch Spence says that as people live longer, more needs to be done to hold on to employees who are nearing the so-called retirement age. But what does that mean? Well, we have her with us tonight. Helen, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You know, let's define this this term right now, the Canadian term. What is retirement age? What are we talking about as it exists? Not what it should be, but where we are right now.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I haven't advocated against changing the retirement age. I'm in favor of people, you know, retiring if they can or if they want to. But the reality is that most older individuals don't have the benefits of pensions, and with the rise in costs, they need to sustain themselves financially for a longer period of time. So typically, retirement age refers to the age that was established in the 1930s in the States with the Social Security Act, which was age 65. And that was 1935, and the average lifespan was 62. So it made sense then to reward people who worked longer or as long or extending time past the average lifespan, that they would be rewarded with some kind of a retirement option. But we now are almost 100 years later, and we're still using the same timelines, and yet our lifespans and our health spans have been extended dramatically.
Well, we certainly seem to have a mix of old and new that we're trying to force into this whole concept when it comes to retirement, Helen. And here's the question I have for you. It's not just health, but it is also the way we work. I remember my father, my father's father, they always had pensions when they worked for, well, my father's case, it was government, and in many of my older relatives' cases, it was companies. But there was that gold pension. Very few of us have that anymore. But still, right. The rules kind of say that it's kind of leaning toward an assumption that more of us have that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the policy and whatnot behind a retirement is one thing. And as you know, we have far more gig workers today than we have people who are working in companies or organizations other than like the public service or teachers who have pension plans the way in which we may traditionally have had them. People also have, they contribute through their employers as well. There are a variety of different options there. However, I think moving into the future, you know, we have to rethink, you know, what work looks like, how are we going to compensate people for it, if we are, you know, looking at longer lives, we have to enable people to retain their jobs longer if they want to or if they need to, but there has to be more flexibility. And there has to be, a strategy, let's put it that way. I mean, the real problem, there are two problems as far as I'm concerned. One has to do with the demographics, that we're aging as a society around the world. It's not just here. And that isn't going to change. So we have to deal with that reality. But the real issue, that we can do nothing about. But the reality is that we have a huge problem with ageism and all the age, you know, biases that we've grown up with, or companies, whoever's working and hiring, have these prejudices about what it means to get old, which really belongs to a 20th century paradigm, not a 21st century. So we need to get over that, and we need to really address ageism. And I don't just mean in the workforce. I mean as a society. People don't recognize there's so much implicit bias and so much lack of understanding of how important age is in the spectrum of diversity, and it's not included.
I remember ageism, a colleague, Helen, saying to me, to your point, that ageism is one of the last really kind of ignored discriminations in the Canadian workplace. It doesn't come up, and it's very hard to prove.
That's right. And the interesting thing about it is it's the one thing that we all have in common. From the minute we're born, we're aging. So we have it to look forward to if we're fortunate. And yet it's still socially acceptable, and it's totally normalized by society in general. I mean, there are some people who recognize it, but there are different types of ageism. And so we really need to educate people about that, which is one of the things that my business is all about, which is talking about how ageism looks and feels, because I don't think most people realize that when they send these funny birthday cards, you know, with hundreds of candles on a birthday cake and somebody coming with a fire extinguisher, you know, that it's quite ageist, as is.
You can still joke about that one.
Such as, you know.
Well, or you're not supposed to, but it's still, you can make an ageist joke, but you can't make jokes about so many other things.
That's right. If you were to replace, you know, she looks good for her age with she looks good for being black, it would never be accepted.
Helen, how did you get into talking and taking a look at this group of people over 60 as really being valuable?
Well, personal stories from other people and also from experiencing it myself. There's something called gendered ageism. In other words, it affects women who are older more than men. Just think about it. Men who have gray hair and pot bellies and whatnot are often referred to as being distinguished, whereas
ouch.
Women are invisible and irrelevant. So I felt that personally, and so I decided to do some research on it, and then I realized to what an extent I had actually internalized ageism myself, which is one of the types of ageism that affects individuals profoundly and consequently society as well. So I decided to move on that front and work with organizations and businesses to provide the tools and training that would help them understand the value of age diversity in the workforce. And I also work with individuals and coach people and have courses to help them understand how ageism to understand ageism, but also to help them transition to their next stage of life. So retirement, it can be just another job, or it could be a volunteer activity. It could be any number of things. But the reality is that, you know, we can learn things and we can have knowledge and we can have skills, but life experience is invaluable, and it's especially true when we have diverse workforces. So we combine the strengths of young people and those who've been around for a long time, and you've got research proving time and time again how valuable and how that impacts productivity, retention, as well as the improved bottom line. There's a ton of value in combining generations, which we more or less have to do because we've got five generations working together at this point. And there's a lot of bad press about how one doesn't get along with the other. But the reality is we have far more in common than differences, and those differences can be easily overcome through training and communication. So it's, you know, when you get older, there's a different need. You need to be relevant. You need to be purposeful in order to have you need a reason to get up in the morning as you get older. And that reason becomes less and less about yourself and more about legacy. And so if you work with younger people, you have that ability to transfer your knowledge and experience in whatever field you're in.
Now, Helen, I don't know if this was your experience, but it certainly was mine. I'm 55. When I turned 50, that's when I started to take a look at my role as being a role of a mentor in some of my areas, because I wasn't going to be able to compete in doing certain things, more physical things in a career, not going forward for very long. But certainly when it comes to, and when I mean that, I mean working weird shifts and things like that I used to do back in the old days.
Right.
But for having that role as a mentor, and being open to that, it gives value. Is that your experience? Is it the experience of those you've been talking with?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's one of the most invaluable roles that somebody who's experienced in a business or in a workplace can. And it's informal. It can be informal, or it can develop naturally. It doesn't have to be a formal program, but it goes both ways, though. I just want to point out that one of the great benefits, I think, today is that we realize that we have different expertise, and there's nothing better than working with a younger person who can teach me a whole lot about areas to which I was never exposed.
Oh, absolutely. And this is one of the fascinating things. I'm lucky. I get to work with people that are often half my age or less. I'm always learning from them.
Yeah, me too. I lived in high schools for most of my career. I was a high school principal and a head of a girls' school. And so my interactions were with staff and students of all ages. So it really enriched my life, and it, I think, also influenced the role that I continue to play, which is learning and helping others understand better that they can still learn as they're getting older, and that they have other ways in which they can contribute. But we devalue and disrespect our elders. We didn't always do that, but we do now in Western society, not in every culture, of course, because we've been so focused on youth, and all advertising and media and programming has been around young people. Until recently. Now it's changing slowly but surely, because people are recognizing that the money is in the older generations, and that transfer of wealth is going to take place soon as well, as people get older and die. So, marketing and advertising is slowly but surely coming around. But just take a look at, the ads that you see on television. They're still basically of young people all the time.
Because 25 to 54 is still this marketing demographic.
That's right.
That has been, and there are some people, Terry O'Reilly, I think, is a person that has recognized it's old school thinking.
That's right.
But it's still entrenched in marketing in this country.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's brilliant. He did a session on that. I just heard it, a segment recently. And it's absolutely the point that I'm trying to make. But it permeates society's thinking to such an extent that we don't recognize it. And as I said before, and you recognize too, ageism continues to be acceptable, but mostly because people are unconscious about it. Somebody said to me the other day, so I'm 73, and he said to me, you don't sound like you're 73. And then the light went on in his head, and he said, that was ageist, wasn't it? I said, very. So those are the kinds of comments. He meant nothing by it, right? On the other hand, probably meant it as a compliment. But it is a backhanded compliment, and it's ageist. Because tell me, Bruce, what does 70 sound like?
I don't know, but I'll also share this with you. I'm a ham radio operator, and as a ham radio operator, 55 is young, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
There are ham radio operators in their 90s that are learning new technologies. And I'm constantly amazed, quietly. I don't make any comments about this. Mm-hmm. But I know of one ham radio operator who's 94 and is learning new digital modes because, in his words, he wants to be ahead of the game for the future.
And he can learn, and that's the thing. That's what we have several myths about getting older, and one is that we decline cognitively, but that isn't necessarily true at all. It's the opposite. It's called crystallized intelligence, and that starts sort of kicks in already in our 30s. Prior to that, we have fluid intelligence, and the brain peaks already in your 30s, but it's a different kind of intelligence that sets in. And it enables, different opportunities, let's put it that way. And learning is still one of those things that we can do. What tends to be associated with cognitive decline is short-term memory loss. And that's sometimes confused with dementia and whatnot, but it's true. It's like a hard drive that's full. Sometimes, you know, the word just doesn't come as quickly as it used to.
Absolutely. Know? Helen, thank you so much for sharing some time and your great insights.
My pleasure.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.